Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of my podcast. Today I have a guest in the podcast again, which is Jonathan Berthe. And Jonathan is the CEO and founder of RoboVision. He started RoboVision about 12 years ago. And RoboVision is a company that is specialized in AI and robotics. They are creating a platform to make AI accessible for as many companies as possible. They are a global player in this field. He has a ton of experience. As a background, he is an applied physics engineer, and he has always been on the front end of artificial intelligence. And as you know, AI will play a crucial role. We had internet, we had mobile. Now we are at that time in history that I think AI will mature and that customer experience will change because of that evolution. And I would love to check some of my ideas with Jonathan. So very thankful that you are here with me, Jonathan.
Very happy to be here, Steve. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's a great pleasure. And, you know, I would like to start off by asking you if you could give us some sort of a state of the union of artificial intelligence, because we hear so many stories every day in the news. There's hype, then there are doom scenarios. It's like it's going to change the world, then it's like it's never going to happen. In your opinion, with your experience, what is the current state of AI in the world?
Well, that's a very ambitious question, but I'll do my best. At this moment, AI is really getting a foothold in a lot of ecosystems, in a lot of verticals in the industry, and also in B2C. Consumers are using Siri and other voice engines to do everyday things like playing a new song on Spotify. But behind the scenes, if you look at these industrial concerns, AI is also a game changer. And what we see is that companies adopting AI fastly, going forward with these so-called MVPs in AI, minimum viable products and proof of concept, that they can lead this revolution, and that they will have created a gap with the so-called more conservative companies. So that's happening as we speak. We see a lot of operations scaling up their AI, a lot of institutes and companies scaling up their AI operations, and very positively also seeing that on the balance sheet. We see there is also a lot of hype, of course, and it depends a little bit on the ecosystem. The last breed of AI engines, so-called deep learning engines, based on GPU training most of the time, they have created quite a promise, but they were based on visual AI analysis, meaning that it all started with reverse engineering the visual pathway of our brains, of the mammalian brain. And that took off really well. I mean, people were astonished by the results, by the difficult imagery which could see the artifacts, which could detect what was needed to detect. And then institutes and groups of researchers try to apply it also in the language domain. And what we see there is also pretty neat stuff like GPT-2, GPT-3, and a lot of promise there, but much more difficult to industrialize it and to make it robust because it's just much more complicated language stuff. So it is, to answer your question in an intermediate conclusion, we see AI at different speeds depending on the ecosystem, depending on the business case, depending on the drivers behind it, the business drivers most of all.
And then could we conclude that the biggest impact today is behind the scenes applications in the industrial world? Is that where the main change is happening right now?
Absolutely. That's really true. If you this morning I had a call about French fries, quality control of French fries. I mean, it is all automated. Even all these black spots, it's done with knives by big multinationals. Extremely fast scanning with AI models. That's where it happens. And nobody realized. I was eating French fries with my kids this noon. And I said like, hey, you know, this black spot that was just missed by the AI system. And we're like, what are you talking about? You mean that computers are also analyzing French fries? I said, yes. I mean, they're almost analyzing everything nowadays. So it is behind the scenes, like a tsunami, a real revolution, and you are simply not aware of that simple product in your local grocery store that is already being scanned by AI. It's really taken off.
And you know, I'm fascinated sometimes by some of these evolutions. I recently was working for a company that was in wood production and was making wooden floors and stuff like this. And they have a forest in Croatia, and their goal is to scan the structure of the wood. Once they pull the tree down, they have the wood, they scan it, and then they can, you know, make an extrapolation of what a complete floor would look like based on that wood. And because of that, they will in the near future allow their customers to select the specific trees that they want to use for their floor. And I was like, wow, that is like an insane form of personalization. Eh? You pick your own tree and you can already visualize it, and then they deliver what you saw on the screen. I mean, those kind of applications are just insane, in my opinion.
Yeah, what we will see in the near future is even more insane applications. Of course, everybody knows the doom scenarios portrayed by Black Mirror episodes. I'm a fan of that, but at the same time, it's awkward to see how things can go wrong with AI, or actually hypothesize about it. But it's, we will just have a commoditization of AI, meaning that it will follow along the same tracks as innovations that we've seen in the past decades or hundreds of years, centuries. If you imagine the introduction of general electricity was also a game changer for many people in the Western world. But after a while, it was just so commoditized that nobody spoke ever again about electricity, apart from the fact, where is the electrical plug? I need to connect my charger. No philosophing about electricity anymore. And in the beginning, at the end of the 19th century, it was pure philosophy. You even had marketing departments of Tesla versus Edison. You know these movies about elephants being electrocuted. And we're living very similar times. In 20 years, people will laugh with this period where we were afraid of Terminators running in the street, running on Skynet AI systems. You understand?
Yeah, I fully agree with that. It's crazy how we all take the movies for granted. And I love the applications that you guys are working on. If I come back to the value that you bring with AI today for customers, you mentioned quality control, you mentioned efficiency, cost savings. Are those the biggest value creators why companies use AI behind the scenes, or are there other motivations for them how to create value?
Well, you have different domains where it can create value. First of all, labor, repetitive labor, difficult labor, dangerous labor. Then you have robotic picking aided by AI camera systems. That's one thing. Then you have, of course, quality estimation, which is if the product is most of the time already in some intermediary form. That's also a value creator, because otherwise you need large pools of people looking 24 hours to production systems. And then you have, of course, everything which has to do with go-to-market marketing, knowing what type of customers want your product, and also there, the more LinkedIn-like analysis kind of things. So you have in different breeds, in different maturity levels of your product and business, different AI capabilities or opportunities.
And what's your favorite example of any of the things that you've been working on? What is, in your opinion, the most impressive application that you've seen so far?
Oh, that's a difficult one. I'm really astonished by GPT-3, in the sense that you can just explain what you want, like an avocado-like chair for my living room, and that it will really create like something that looks like a chair and has an avocado-like form. That's flabbergasting. At the same time, it is overhyped, let us be clear. This is just not usable at this time. But it's an indication of the speed at which things are changing and how fast conservative old-school businesses are crumbling with this new wave of AI systems that will eventually also replace some of the most creative among humanity. And that's like almost like a religious thing for some. Because that is the last, icon of humanity. It's our creativity. And if you attack that, then we're lost. I mean, philosophically speaking.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if creativity is the last thing for humans. I always thought that I can believe that computers can be creative. I mean, we've seen it with DeepMind and AlphaGo, that they created new moves in the game that wasn't done before by humans. So that was already a form of creativity. I was thinking always that empathy was the last typical human quality that would be difficult to replicate with AI.
That's a good one. I mean, I didn't realize we're ending up so philosophically already early on the show, but yeah, empathy is, I mean, it's difficult to respond to that. But on the one hand, AI systems will be able to track emotions and know in which emotional state you are, but they will never be empathic because they're not like us. They have no five senses and they have no blood and senses to be empathic. So it's almost like a Sartrean question of existentialism. You cannot get something which is not like you to be empathic, truly empathic with you, because there is some kind of mirroring underlying to that statement, like feeling how he feels, but then you need to be of the same consistency, understand?
Yeah, it's very, very philosophical, but you know, in the field where I'm active in customer experience, I always tell people if they're afraid of AI and that jobs will go away and all that kind of doom scenarios, I always come back to empathy, because that's something that a machine cannot do. And then the challenge is to make sure as a human that you excel in those fields where computers are not that good in, and then we need to focus on areas that are closer to, you know, emotional behavior, which is beyond tracking emotions. So I think that there's an opportunity there. But go ahead, Jonathan.
I tend to disagree a little bit, because okay. I think GPT-3, for instance, if somebody would have a psychotic episode, mm-hmm. GPT-3 would be able to based on your WhatsApp messages or your emails, would be able to detect that much earlier if it was trained on a large pool of such episodes than a normal human being. So it can be of a true aid to in psychiatry and psychology, but it is a bit like, strange to apply it, because it's similar to a psychopath. A psychopath can mimic empathy, but he will never be truly empathic, you understand? So it's a dangerous thing to release on vulnerable souls.
Yeah, that's true. And then, of course, you have the access to data. Maybe I live in a household where I don't share my real feelings, or I'm all by myself and I don't have that many people to talk to besides my WhatsApp and my Google and my Facebook, and all that data can be, you know, used to understand what's going on in your mind. So, yeah, it's a good point. The access to data of the machine is larger than the access to data.
Exactly.
And Jonathan, if you look like to an industry like agriculture, right? You're doing a lot of work in the agricultural space, helping organizations, farmers for personalized farming, those kind of things. If you look at the entire flow from the farmer that is, you know, planting his seeds until the food ends up at my table,
yes,
I can see the benefits for the farmer: efficiency, higher quality, less work. Do you also see at the end of the cycle advantages because of that for the end user?
Of course, yes, of course. Very good question. Good that you asked that, because imagine just tomatoes, or imagine strawberries. Yeah. Like, would you know if we use chemicals? I mean, a lot of farmers use chemicals to get rid of these parasites and other diseases. Now, it's not healthy for us and for other beings to eat produce with chemicals on. So if you have AI-enabled greenhouses where you can see whether there is a parasite or work on an ecosystem where good parasites kill bad parasites and have camera systems surveying that, it will in the end be very good for the end consumer, because he will have more healthy, cheaper, more tasty food in his salads or in his fruit bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So the quality will result in, you know, we will find that back in everything that we eat and consume. And do you think at the end of the day there will be a price advantage for the consumer, or is that a bridge too far?
I think there will be. I'm quite convinced, but it's not that in 6 months the price of produce will go down, because of course there is scarcity in terms of open space and so on. So in the end, prices will go up dramatically. But AI will be, and robotization will be able to flatten that curve a bit.
Yeah. Okay. If we take it now from the behind the scenes B2B industrial applications of AI to consumer applications, you already mentioned it in the introduction. We have these Spotify, Netflix algorithms, Facebook algorithms. Where do you see the biggest jump forward in the next 2 or 3 years? Because we have these algorithms now, but to be honest, Jonathan, I'm very hungry for more. We've been talking about a lot of, you know, tools and applications and benefits for the end user because of AI, but I'm still a little bit waiting for it, if you know what I mean. Like Alexa, Google Assistant, it's cool, but I'm still waiting for the iPhone after the BlackBerry moment for consumer AI, if you know what I mean.
I think you're right. I think, I mean, if for instance, if you search Google Maps and you give in what's the weather in Antwerp, he gives Antwerp, Texas, while you're always have been living in Antwerp in my case, so or a small period in Ghent. But it's stupid that even with the big Google running billions in P&L, they still haven't figured out how to avoid these kind of wrong answers in their parade system, Google Voice. So I fully agree. And I think this has to do with the with what Geert Nuls calls gigantism, in the sense that the bigger the organization grows, the more, the less agile it becomes, and the less it will solve a real problem for a real everyday human being in living in some city. So I'm a strong believer in startup and scale-ups. Of course, I'm biased, but I think these innovations will come from agile young teams that combine cutting-edge technology in a fast way to come up with an AI-powered calendar. I mean, how stupid it is to, if we, Stephen, if we want to meet, I mean, what interactions do we need? We need to mail. What are your time slots? And then I need to respond to that. And then you don't respond within 2 days. So one time slot is already... I mean, why is there no butler, AI butler, that just arranges that with your butler? I understand. And he knows that you really have a bad day. And he's just politely explaining to you, like, we're just going to reschedule because my human has got a bad day. So, I mean, this is really so needed. And I'm really looking forward to that. But it will be there. I'm quite sure within 5 years.
I wrote a thriller. I've sent you a copy of Eternal.
Yes, thank you for that. Yes,
and there I work with a virtual assistant for everyone. And when I was writing it, I was like, I need this today. And so by 2041, we will have it. I can be assured of that.
Oh, much earlier. But there will be plenty of other stuff by 2041. So I'm not sure if you will like everything that will be available then.
Oh, I cannot wait to have my personal butler, though. I think that my personal butler and my self-driving car, those are like the two things that I'm really craving for right now.
Yeah, you will have your personal investor assistant also. And before you know, they're like going on Reddit on some AI forum for AI engines and making the next short squeeze. So be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Let's see what happens. But it's what I find fascinating is that... companies, let's say incumbent companies, are looking now for AI interfaces to help their customers. If we take, for instance, in Belgium, we have KBC that came up with a virtual, it's not investor assistant, but like a personal assistant for your banking affairs, right?
Yes.
Kate, you've probably seen it. They're using, if I'm not mistaken, software of Google behind the scenes. And, you know, I like those kind of cases. It's not perfect yet, and we can be cynical about it, that it's not good enough. But I'm looking forward to more incumbents that start to come up with AI interfaces for the end user. So indeed, that the market increases and that we're not fully just looking at the Amazons and the Googles of this world. I think that would be really important for the evolution.
But it is happening. I think we both you and I were very impatient, and we wanted tomorrow or yesterday better. Yeah. But it will be there, and it's normal that it's being absorbed in at slower rates than what we wish for.
Yeah, you're right. We have to be patient. But anyhow, let's motivate people to speed up their game. Yes. We have a lot of people listening to my podcast that are interested in customer experience, that are interested in making customers happy. What would be your recommendation for them? If you are responsible for the customer experience of a B2B or B2C company, doesn't matter, and you want to work with AI, where should they start?
Well, they shall hire some creatives or point to the creatives that are already there in their teams, have a workshop, think out of the box. For instance, if you're in fashion, think an app that can just advise you on the right color scheme for your clothes, with how you look, that kind of thing. So you can, in every ecosystem, you can think of very nice ideas that are quite feasible with the technology of nowadays. So I would suggest think out of the box and dare. Just spend some money knowing that there is a high likelihood that you will fail, but dare to fail.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, that's a good advice. I hire people, be creative, all those kind of things. But where do you see the largest potential? I mean, should they go for customer service? Should they use it in marketing, sales?
I think the largest potential is in marketing and sales. Tooling, apps that can just recreate the product already installed in your house, that can recreate the rework that you wanted to do with your house facade. Those are, because that creates like, oh wow, yes, I need this because I see how it will look like when it's installed. So I think that's a big boon. And what we will see is platforms that will be integrated with our building companies. So now you have this so-called BIM standards for B2B building, of course, but you will also have it for consumers. You will ask your architect within a couple of years, like just provide me the 3D file, and you will already shop for your complete house, even when there is no stone being built already. You understand?
Yeah, I understand. And you know, just think about the opportunities there. And
yeah, marketplace, everything. You can have aesthetic advisors that say, like, I will do your living room, no cure, no pay. We will have a voting within your Facebook friends, and if the vote is above 8. You have to pay me. So you have all kinds of other commercial schemes, for instance.
Yeah. And just one last topic, Jonathan, that I want to touch upon. One of the most frequently asked questions in my presentations when I talk about AI and what it could mean for customers is that people are afraid of the filter effect, where a company like Amazon knows you so well that you say, Alexa, I want to have batteries, and that they decide what kind of brand is being exposed, or when you go to McDonald's and with the app, they recognize you, and on the screens in the drive-thru, they automatically communicate the kind of burger of which they think you will order. A lot of people are afraid of that filter effect, that our world will narrow down and that serendipity will disappear. And a lot of people are worried about that. And I would like to throw that at you to see what your opinion is about that.
I think they're right. I think that is a mistake that's being performed right now in the AI community, that is to over-customize, to make these so-called echo rooms on your Facebook timelines, and to create an experience which is almost like a Truman Show, that you're actually perceiving the world from inside your bubble, your filtered bubble. But I think, as mistakes are being done right now, solutions will come at a faster pace. And in the end, we will all benefit from this technology.
Yeah. And I like the idea in the book Homo Deus, where the hypothesis was like, if AI really advances further, it will know that you like variety, and it will understand that maybe in let's say 80% of the times you want to have the same pizza over and over again, but it also knows that if a certain new pizza arrives on the menu and it has those ingredients on it, that there's a big chance that you will know it and it will offer new things. So the filter will open up once it works really, really well. And today it doesn't work that good yet, so we cannot do it like it should be done.
Absolutely true. But it has also to do with the true nature of an AI system. Yeah. The true nature of an AI system is the so-called cost function. It's the goal of the AI system. Every AI system that exists has a goal. And if the goal is like good enough for a human being on the long run, like to contribute to its happiness and everything, then all of these problems can probably be solved. Yeah. It is to align the goals of the big corporates with the humans, the everyday men and women in the street. That is the big challenge for capitalism nowadays, because now it's misaligned. I'm sure you saw the Social Dilemma, the documentary. I mean, we have created like a Frankenstein that is exploiting our dopamine systems. And that is what needs to be solved in the next 5 years in order to come back to the true goal of our society, that is to contribute to a collective happiness that is better than the one of yesterday.
Yeah, but can it be solved like a system like Facebook that is now such a $1 billion making machine based on this algorithm that works, and they're making more and more money and more companies are advertising? I mean, what is the incentive for them to change the model? And can you create the same kind of money-making machine without the Frankenstein monster behind it? I wonder.
Well, I don't think that you have... I mean, in the case of Facebook, it's, of course, a product of how capitalism works. So that's evident that you cannot change it, even if you would like to do so. But I think that what happens to... mainframes in the 70s will eventually happen to big tech and AI in 2000, the 20s, the roaring 20s. What you will have is the Linux Torvalds of AI and society that will build truly open source social networks, meaning that you can decide to share your DNA if you know that it is privacy preserved, that you will help other people with experiences that you know they will also have because you're older and have some similar genes. And that is what the world really needs. The world really needs a Linus Torvalds for Facebook, an open source social network.
Yeah, but it already, if you look at Signal, for instance, versus WhatsApp, it's an open source network that has grown in popularity because of the issues with the privacy statements of WhatsApp. On the other hand, you see how difficult it is to mobilize a population. If you at the top, Signal was the most downloaded app and they had about 1 million downloads a day. And that sounds like a lot, but imagine that they would keep that rhythm for a year. Then they have 365 million new users. I mean, they would have to do that for 6 years before they reach the 2.5 billion of WhatsApp, unless the curve becomes exponential, of course. But you see how difficult it is to move a population to another platform. Even in theory, it would be safer and better to be there. It's not that easy, is my feeling.
I think it's more easy than you think, because the society is ruled by so-called black swan events. And Cambridge Analytica, for instance, was maybe not really a black swan event, but it was like quite unexpected what type of impact it had. It probably led, in retrospect, to the rise of Trumpism. And I do think that if a critical mass of people is aware of such disasters that can happen, that you will have disproportionate rise of such signal-like platforms. So I do think that there is some self-regulation within society to, if some thing gets exaggerated, to move to something that balances that out.
And do you think that, imagine 5 years from now, that we will be on new platforms like Signal and the alternative then for Facebook that has to be created? Or do you think a company like Facebook can actually make a turnaround and create new business models using new AI, new user interfaces to survive that black swan event?
I think Facebook is already in survival mode. If you see how Tim Cook, with his privacy statements about Facebook, is attacking Facebook, what you see is that if Facebook doesn't embrace these ideas that are now everywhere in society, that privacy and youngsters needs to be protected, then it will eventually crumble, just like every dictatorship crumbles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that, you know, if you look 10 years from now, I'm also convinced that today we have a pretty centralized power of AI and technology and influence. I think 10 years from now, it will be much more decentralized because of many of the things that we talked about today, and which is a good evolution. So I'm very hopeful for that, to be honest.
Absolutely. Power to the people.
All right. Well, that's a beautiful closure, Jonathan. I really want to thank you because I really enjoyed your insights and our conversation. Go on for hours picking your brain and listening to your expertise. So thanks a lot for sharing that with me and my listeners.
It was a real pleasure being on this show, Steve.
All right. Thank you.